Namaste Radio is brought to you by your host, the blue-collar goddess, Sarah Nash, and a small crew of guest personalities determined to amuse, entertain, and occasionally astonish you. And now, a different brand of enlightenment streaming live across this galaxy and probably a few more. Namaste Radio on the Om Times Radio Network.
It's your very own blue-collar goddess, Sarah Nash, as your host. And you're listening to the highly anticipated first broadcast of Radio Namaste on the On Times Radio Network. Welcome to a very different brand of enlightenment. I'm always honoring the crazy in you and channeling your inner lunatic. You know, it's one of my superpowers. Today, we have some awesome things for you. I'm excited to bring you our first in-studio guest, the alchemist behind Alchemy Stones. He's author and artist Peter Messerschmidt, who may or may not be channeling his inner Corbin Dallas today. We might have to use a pogo stick meditation to free his words, because this alchemist is a bona fide HSP. So we're going to get both ends of that. We're going to find out about the artist behind Alchemy Stones, and we're also going to find out a little bit more about what I'm going to call the flavor of the year, because HSP is going to be something that you're going to be hearing a lot about as a result of Alanis Morissette becoming a part of the HSP movement and the new movie. But anyways, this is a really rare interview opportunity. And speaking of meditations, we're going to be introducing a regular guest. That will be Lavender Sunny Sparkle. She's a meditative vegan yoga guru, and she's going to lead us through the Radio Namaste meditative moments. In fact, let's just go ahead and take a few minutes to tell you about some of the amazing, wonderful cast and crew behind Radio Namaste and the lineup of personalities that you can expect to hear often here. We already told you about Lavender Sunny Sparkle. Well, she grew up in Nebraska as Denise Thompson, but after jumping on the wrong Greyhound bus and falling asleep the day she finished her first semester at community college, she decided to stay in Barstow, California, where she actually woke up. Anyway, she claims that waking up on the West Coast enlightened her, and someday she's actually going to finish her quest to see the Pacific Ocean. She's delightful. She really is, and she's kind of an airhead, but you didn't hear that from me. Also, I just want to point out that you're probably going to have to excuse our dust right now. You might hear a little bit of construction noise and hammers and nails, but we're still building Rome. In fact, if you take the R and the E off of Rome, you have Om. Every once in a while, we're just going to stop everything that we do here on Radio Namaste, and we're going to ask all listeners just to stop and say Om. Well, anyways. Rome is actually on the way to the Emerald City, which I live across the bay from. And what we want you to do most of all is just to ignore the man behind the curtain. It's kind of a joke around here. Also, what we're going to do is we're going to have moments where we will stop and read about things that people are asking the blue collar goddess. One of the things that I would really like people to avoid doing when regard to sending in their questions with regard to what's going to happen next is, am I pregnant? Does he love me? And what was I in a past life? Because if that happens, we're going to bring our character, Ahmed, the camel of truth. Ahmed, he has one thing to say, and really one thing only. It's a very obnoxious sound, and that's the truth behind really, really awful questions. So we have celebrity poetry lined up. We have Gingo wisdom, which is things that my grandson says, and we'll also occasionally bring my grandson Gavin on, because he's probably the wisest person in the planet today. And I also want to give a shout out right now to my oldest son, Jesse. He's probably one of my greatest teachers, and it's his birthday today. So not only is it his birthday, it's the birthday of Radio Namaste. And I also want to take a moment here just to give you a little heads up about who I am, why I'm doing this, and where we're probably going to go with this. Now, Namaste, as you can see, is spelled with the H. And that happened as a result of going to a lot of these New Age conferences and lightworker workshops where people pretend to be enlightened. And my goal is to show people what authentic living in a 3D, very busy, complicated world is. When you turn around to somebody and you say Namaste or in Lakesh, what are you saying? Are you saying, I honor the light in you as you honor the light in me? I'm dumping my ego as you dump your ego? Or are you just pretending to really understand what the foundation of honoring somebody else's light is? And as we gather here and we have a really good time and we're a little irreverent, I want to make sure that we understand exactly what the ultimate goal is with regard to raising consciousness, understanding what enlightenment is, and being really honest with each other. So when this gentleman turned around and he did this Namaste issue with me at a conference that I attended, the very last one, and told me Namaste, I felt like I'd been slapped. And at that moment, I had this shift in my consciousness, and I thought to myself, am I being authentic? I sort of woke up. I had a wake-up moment. It was an epiphany. I looked around at all these people who were pretending to understand what was happening to each other. And in this room, I was shocked. I was literally shocked. And I began thinking about how His Holiness had gathered 40 of the greatest minds. And all he wanted to do was have a platform about how we could assist one another and what we could do to promote peace and illumination. And everybody just was talking about how bright their light was and trying to knock each other off the pedestal and vie for the spotlight because nobody was honoring each other's truth. So Namaste is about honoring your inner lunatic. And if we can face the fact that each of us has an inner lunatic, each of us has a shadow, each of us has a motive and an agenda, if you can build your mission statement and really define it and bring it back to the foundation of truth, you'll find that as you honor your inner lunatic, you're beginning to honor and wake up to your inner light. And then you won't be afraid to join up with other people who also have light. So when I say Namaste, am I saying Namaste or am I saying Namaste? Now, with that in mind, I would like to point out that Radio Namaste is going to be offering out awards each week. It will be the Radio Namaste Award. And in fact, it's not sarcastic. It's not irreverent. It's really, truly about finding people out there. Sometimes it's nepotistic. Sometimes I'm going to offer it to people that I know and I've had personal interactions with. But I want listeners to send in their ideas and their suggestions for who we should offer the weekly Radio Namaste Award to. This week, I would like to offer the very first Radio Namaste Award to my husband, Peter Messerschmidt, also the alchemist behind Alchemy Stones. But as I began building this little thing we're calling Rome here at Radio Namaste, he brought me food, he answered phone calls, and he was my greatest champion in moments where I was asking myself, am I really doing the right thing? Do people really want to listen to me? And he honored the inner light in me in a way that blew me away. And he supported me in those dark moments. I'm very, very fortunate that my husband is also my very best friend and my greatest champion. But he's also very, very gentle and very, very kind when it comes to telling me the truth. If we all begin to be a little bit more gentle and a little bit more kind when we tell each other the truth, I think our inner light won't be so afraid to shine when we are trying to build a foundation of courage. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and introduce Peter Messerschmidt. We've got a few more minutes before our next break. So Peter, let's say hi to the world.
Hi to the world. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's really awesome to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, we're going to have a powwow about alchemy stones. I want you to tell us when you decided to start doing it, how you decided to start doing it, and a little bit about the process. And then I want to talk about being an HSP. So let's first focus on alchemy stones.
Well, when I was a little kid, my mom had great hopes for me that I was going to be artistic in some way. And she would bring me these exercise books and pieces of paper and hope that I would learn to draw outside the lines. And as it turned out, I really had absolutely no talent whatsoever for drawing anything better than stick figures. However, I was, even when I was 5 or 6, I was fascinated by patterns. And I could see, I could look at flowers and rocks and things out in nature. And somehow on an intuitive level, I understood that there were these patterns in them. And when I was, again, just a kid, I would start doodling on pieces of paper, and there were these intricate geometric patterns, and people would look at them and go, there's no way a 7-year-old could have drawn this. And I was just trying to put what was in my mind onto a piece of paper, and I made bookmarks and things for my mom, and she thought, wow, this is interesting. It wasn't exactly what she expected, but so basically alchemy stones were born out of seeing patterns in nature.
Well, as a mother myself, and again, happy birthday, Josie. You know, we always think our children do everything perfectly, and we're always amazed and stunned, and we want to promote them because, you know, everybody's child is the student of the month or the student of the day or whatever. But would you say that your mom influenced you then to become more involved in this, or how were you validated with regard to that?
Well, she did keep all these bookmarks and put them in her cookbooks, and I thought that meant she really liked them, so I kept making more and more of them. And it also was for me just, it was a way to relax, and because I had, we'll get to that when we talk about highly sensitive people, I had a very lively imagination, and in a sense, it was a way for me, again, without really knowing what meditation was, it was a way for me to dump stuff out of my mind.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
The Laying Out of Hands Healing Radio Show is about treating the whole person, mind, body, and spirit. Join me, Charles Smith, as I share life balancing measures such as nutrition and spiritual practices to help you take charge of your own health and wellness every Thursday at 7 p.m. on Om Times Radio.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. What if business could be fun? What if business is the adventure of living? What are you choosing? Where do you do business that makes it easier, more fun, or more joyful for you? We'd love to see where you do business. Connect with us on Instagram at Joy of Business or Twitter at Joy of Business and share your pictures with hashtags Business Done Where and Joy of Business. Let's change the world with business.
Hi, I'm Katrina Kavanagh, host of the I Am Wisdom radio show. I Am Wisdom is about the connection between mind work and energy work, spirituality, and living a wonderful life. Looking forward to sharing each Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with you.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
And we're back. Hey, thanks for sticking around, and you'll be glad you did. As our first guest today, Peter Messerschmidt was telling us a little bit about his process behind alchemy stones. I actually have a set of alchemy stones, and what I found was that they aligned with certain elements of the chakra system. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes because I'm actually, you know, I have the inside scoop on this, but let's start with the, you were telling us about how your mom influenced you and she was putting some of those designs in her recipe book, which, you know, I'm part of Jungian analysis and synchronicity and signs and omens, but recipes are like alchemy.
They are, in a sense. And it started with these 2D drawings, and later on when I was in school and in college, during moments of downtime or during a boring class for that matter, I would sit and I would doodle these same patterns, and it's just something that's been with me as a almost as a meditation for pretty much all my adult life now. Now, the transition from having drawings on paper to going to draw on stones only happened a few years ago. I've always been a rock collector. I would walk on the beach and pick up things, including interesting-looking stones, and it was suggested to me that why don't I put one of these patterns on a stone.
Who suggested that to you?
Well, you did, as a matter of fact. It was really your inspiration to, I mean, I'd drawn, you'd seen my drawings in greeting cards where I'd put them in the margins and things like that. And because of the love of rocks, I tried to replicate the pattern, which is a little different on a three-dimensional object. And
wait a minute, I'm just going to interrupt you here real quickly, and I apologize for that, but I don't remember telling you that you should put it on a rock. I remember being absolutely delighted and amused when you presented me with and I actually have it sitting right here in the studio, but I remember when you handed it to me, and I was just so blown away by how it was so intricate, and I want to ask you about that too, but it was me? I did that?
Well, it was you and it wasn't you. I remember just that you at one point said, wow, these patterns would be amazing on rocks, and then let it go at that.
Ah, okay.
And I picked up on that and decided that from there that was the direction I was going to take. And in the beginning, it was, compared to what I do now, it was fairly crude. But then I realized that there was an entire process involved in going out and finding just the right stone to paint on. And stones have certain energies. And then I would come home.
Whoa. Okay. I'm gonna just stop you right there. Okay. This is where I get to honor everybody's inner lunatic. All right. So, you know, you're walking down the beach and you're looking at stones. And so when you look at a stone, how do you know what stone has what energy? I mean, what do you mean when you say energy? What is that?
Well, if you've ever beachcombed, you have undoubtedly picked up objects that just felt right in your hand. And it's like you just, instead of laying it back down on the beach, you want to hold it in your hand, put it in your pocket, keep touching it. And sometimes it evokes a certain feeling or a memory or something. And
like pet rocks?
Like pet rocks, almost. Yeah.
I wish I'd thought of that one.
In a sense, I mean, that was a great idea. And so you end up, rather than just leaving them at the beach, and you take a few rocks home, and it's kind of, that's where my starting point is. I pick up, you know, in a given day to the beach, I probably pick up 1,000 rocks, but I only come home with 12 because, you know, they're too rough, they don't feel right, or they're edgy, or something isn't proper.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I mean, just for an outsider looking in, they're like, I can paint on a rock. And in fact, if you go out there online or whatever, I there's all kinds of people who are painting little cats and pigs and all kinds of different things on rocks and landscapes and scenery and stuff. So, I mean, anybody can paint on a rock, right?
Pretty much anybody can paint on a rock. And part of what was important to me was trying to impart a little, if you will, magic onto the rocks, where it wasn't just an object with a picture of something we see in everyday life, but rather it was something that had a property that would make you want to keep it maybe as a talisman or as your favorite, even if it's just your favorite worry rock or your good luck rock. And so as I kept working with those ideas, and I was in a semi-meditative state when I was drawing the patterns, I realized that these rocks, they have a subtle sort of power once they have been painted with a pattern. And some make you look at them and you hold them and they make you feel peaceful and they can become a meditation rock. And as you were pointing out, there are rocks that feel like they are aligned with certain chakras in your body, or some make you feel inspired, some make you feel peaceful. And that's kind of how the whole metaphysical angle entered into alchemy stones, and why I ended up ultimately calling them alchemy stones, because they are about, you know, when you touch one and hold one, a little tiny part of you, it may be very, very subtle, feels slightly changed, and that is what alchemy is. It's changing one thing into another.
Alchemy is changing one thing into another. So basically what you're doing is you're taking this excellent piece of earth, this stone, and are they always round? Or, I mean,
most of the time they're round. One of the things that's important to me, I'm a very tactile person, and it's important that it should feel nice and soft and smooth when you're holding it. It also has practical implications, because painting on a rough rock, you tend to lose definition in the pattern. You need a fairly smooth surface.
Okay. By the way, I want to point out, if anybody happens to hear any meowing or what have you, it's because the abomination space cat known as BB walked into my office. And she never does this, but she obviously realizes that it's very important for us to point out that space cats are a real hidden threat. And anyways, we'll talk more about space cats at a different point, but Peter, go right ahead. Tell us a little bit more about your transformation into an alchemist.
Well, I suppose I have long been an alchemist of sorts without really knowing it. As you were pointing out earlier, you know, recipes, in a sense, are a form of alchemy when you're cook something, and I've always been interested in cooking, and I've always been interested in the process of taking something ordinary and in some ways making it more appealing or more beautiful, or making it in such a way that it changes our lives or our perception of what's around us.
Well, I know that you can describe the universe. I think it was Tesla who said, you can explain the universe in vibration, frequency, and energy. And once we begin to understand vibration, frequency, and energy, everything will become well-known, and there won't be any secrets. I mean, essentially, I think at some point in the future, they're probably going to call somebody like me a doctor of transdimensional communication, if of course, you know, what I see and what happens around me can be verified. And I know it can, because I am the world's greatest skeptical psychic. I mean, people come to me all the time and they tell me, you know, there's a ghost in my bathroom, and, you know, come to find out what they have is a leak under their sink, and oh my God, words, I can't speak them right now. But anyway, so I'm going to give you back some more words. So, I mean, it takes, what kind of chutzpah must you have to call yourself an alchemist? And I mean, there are people out there who call themselves shamans, and I call myself a psychic and clairvoyant and blue collar goddess. But I mean, labels like alchemy and being a wizard or a witch or a priest or what have you, I mean, what exactly aligns your energy with the word alchemist? Because when you think of alchemist, you think of chemistry. So is it visual chemistry? Is it?
Well, for me, it is in part visual chemistry, and in part it is...
He's handing me the cat, people. We're taking her outside. Go ahead.
It is also feeling chemistry, in the sense that I'm changing the way people might feel about a rock, and through that, in some little tiny way, the way they may be feeling about themselves and their life. You know, if I hand you a plain gray rock, you're going to have, yeah, okay, that's a rock. Now, if I hand you a gray rock with a very intricate geometric pattern on it that has some of its basis in sacred geometry, you're going to have a completely different feeling about that rock. And for many people, I mean, one of the things about alchemy stones is that the most important thing is to get them in people's hands. Because, you know, I watch, for example, when we do craft shows, how people will pick them up and stand there and just look at them and be amazed and baffled, and then start talking about something it reminds them of that they've done or seen in a past part of their lives. And
yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that process, because what I've noticed after being with you, and then here's the funny part about it. We went to a cannabis fair, a cannabis market. And by the way, in Washington State, it's legal. So I don't want to hear any feedback from that. I don't smoke pot, but I don't have a problem with people who do. Anyways, we went to a cannabis market fair in Hoodsport, Washington last summer. And we decided to put a bunch of these alchemy stones in a basket. And we called them stoner stones. We sold out of them. Because I found that when people were in a quote unquote altered place, they were more inclined to be open to the vibration. And we're about ready to head into a break. But at this point, I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how a highly sensitive person can use their art as meditation to spread a word of light and love. So Peter, keep that in mind. And so we're going to talk about HSPs when we come back, and we're going to talk about being an artist and what that means in the world of the highly sensitive person, and how you can break the barrier of silencing your inner critic. My inner critic, by the way, has a Southern accent. It'll be interesting when we when we introduce her to the world of the Radio Namaste listeners. And then we are also going to talk about how we can connect with Radio Namaste, Club Radio Namaste, and then, of course, my passion and my reason for reason, which is the White Light Express and humanity healing. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about also one of the ways that I use my alchemy in the channeling sessions and the oracle readings that I do.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle. Join Elliot Jolish, the business therapist, each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Elliot Jolish Hour, as he interviews business experts on your behalf. And you're invited to email your business questions to questions@ecjgroup.com for answers, live, on air, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Elliot Jolish Hour. The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Well, how's that for the halfway mark for the first maiden voyage of Radio Namaste? Thanks for sticking around again. And as usual, you will probably end up scratching your head a couple of times and going, what the heck is going on? But I promise you, at the end of it all, it's all going to make sense. Now, here's another thing that makes sense. Art. Coming back to us is Peter Messerschmidt, the artist, the author, and the mastermind behind Alchemy Stones.
Hi.
Hi. Well, thanks for sticking around, too.
Well, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Let's talk about colors. Let's talk about actually putting designs on these stones. Now, we know that when people look at them, and I, again, before the break, we were talking about cannabis bears and stoner stones and how people tend to look at these when they're just like walking around and they go, oh, wow, at a fair. They're like, this is amazing. But it almost, I think what happens is that people become so overwhelmed by the energetic impulse that really, honestly, I swear to God, the energetic impulse that's coming off of these stones is that they actually walk away and they look a little confused and perplexed and they come back because I think what's happening is you're triggering an ancient memory. And this is where I'm going to, you know, this is where I get all woo-woo, which really isn't woo-woo at all, but, you know, it's physics, quantum physics and things like that. But the alchemy behind alchemy stones is that you're tapping into ancient knowledge, ancient memories, and possibly even an angelic language, in my opinion, based on what I've watched other people do and what I've used the stones for. So who are you to do this kind of stuff and just put that stuff out there? I mean, what the heck, Peter?
Well, I am actually nobody in particular. I am perhaps a vessel for spirit. And, you know, if truly these are ancient patterns and this is ancient knowledge, I am just somebody who happens to be able to tap into that information. I see the patterns and I'm able to put them, you know, on the stones, and people are somehow changed or motivated by seeing them. You know, as for who am I to do this? Well, you know, a car gets you from point A to point B, and I am just, you know, a vehicle for sharing that knowledge, if indeed that's the way it works.
Well, here, this is another issue that is really personal to the Blue Collar Goddess and Radio Namaste, and I'm actually talking about myself in the third person. Hello! But, you know, authenticity and credibility. I mean, I've spent so many years that in my studies, my esoteric studies, and in my research into paranormal and what people might say is a spiritual and sacred encounter. But I can't say that I've got a PhD in personal psychology or sociological studies. I mean, I do have a degree in theology, but big deal. So what are your credentials? I mean, a lot of people say I'm authorized by God, but tell us a little bit about, your cred and where you're coming from.
Well, I guess this is kind of where I'd like to bring HSPs or highly sensitive people into the equation a little bit, because I suppose I should start a little bit with filling in some background on this HSP term. As you say, it's at the threshold of becoming the flavor of the month. A highly sensitive person is a concept that was originally researched by Dr. Elaine Aron, who published a landmark book in 1996 called The Highly Sensitive Person. And whereas the idea of somebody being sensitive has always been around, you know, and many people have been told you're too sensitive, you're getting your feelings hurt too easily and stuff like that, she actually went in and looked at the neuroscience and determined that some people's central nervous systems are quite simply wired differently to where they experience life and everything in it more intensely than other people.
Well, okay, but see, you know, I got a lot of friends out there who, when they realized that I was part of the HSP crowd and yada yada, now suddenly they're suddenly HSP because they get their feelings hurt. I have one friend in particular who absolutely is convinced that she's HSP, even though you and I know she isn't. And I hope, like, heck, you're listening, girlfriend, because this is your wake-up call. You know who you are. You're not HSP just because you get your feelings hurt and just because you are hypersensitive to the moods of the people around you. I mean, give me the 3-minute elevator speech between an empath, an HSP, and somebody who is just should be slapped often. They haven't been beaten up enough, but we'll get into that later.
Well, there is one of the things that the HSP trait, as Dr. Aaron originally defined it, is actually something called sensory processing sensitivity. And you can put a person who has been identified as an HSP, you can wire them up with functional MRIs and study what their brains do compared to a person who does not identify as an HSP. And there are distinct differences in how people's neurotransmitters fire. An HSP is simply one of the things that I use as an example is car lights, headlights from cars. A lot of people, they don't see much with headlights from cars at night, but most HSPs are blinded like the sun is shining in their eyes. Basically, everything comes at you more intensely, which can be a great benefit. But as Dr. Aaron pointed out, it's a neutral trait. You know, it gives you definite benefits in some aspects. You're able to hear, see, smell, sense other people much better than most. But on the other hand, it overwhelms you more quickly. You know, it's like a very high-powered computer. It can do a lot of stuff, but it burns out faster.
So basically, it's your brain multitasking on different levels, processing that information in a way that other people might not be able to, well, they don't understand, first of all. But basically, what we deal with, and I love to tell people this, is that not only are we listening to the conversation and watching the lights and hearing the music and hearing the chatter or experiencing the situation in just a very simple room, for an HSP to walk into a restaurant, they have to parse and locate the and find a place inside of them where it's okay to hear the dishes clattering, the waitress talking, the baby crying, the dog barking, the car alarm out in the parking lot, the hot sun coming in through the window. I mean, it's all of these things. It's like being so hyper aware of everything around you and putting it all in nanoseconds and putting them in little packages. And then on top of that, we have to deal with the beautiful bag floating in the wind.
Yes. Well, it's a fairly complex concept. And one of the things that's really important and becoming increasingly important is having a clear definition of what we're talking at. Because as you say, a lot of people hear the terms highly sensitive, and they think it's somebody who gets their feelings hurt all the time. Some people think, well, that's the same as an empath. I feel other people's feelings all the time. But simply the fact that you feel other people's feelings doesn't necessarily make you an HSP.
Or an empath, by the way.
Or an empath, for that matter.
We'll talk about that later.
Another thing that often gets brought up is people who call themselves sensitive believe we're talking about being able to hear spirits and see ghosts and basically have supernatural experiences. Well, that in and of itself, whereas it may be a subset of being a highly sensitive person, it isn't.
But not always.
It isn't always.
Yeah.
And the social and cultural definition is often quite different and in many cases negatively skewed compared to the scientific definition of what a highly sensitive person is. But sort of to bring it back in a circle towards artistic, one of the things that Dr. Aaron pointed out is that most highly sensitive people tend to be very artistic or at least very creative because they do notice so many details around them. You know, a field of yellow flowers isn't just a blotch of yellow out there. It is all these little intricate patterns of individual flowers and blades of grass and different shades of yellow. And because they HSPs process deeply and feel things intensely, they're often given to find ways to express, generally through art, sometimes through music, these things that they see. And so creativity, for me, is a way to share some of the things I see. And I see a lot of patterns in nature. And I've always been fascinated by sacred geometry. And these are things that come out through the alchemy stones.
Okay. Well, keeping that in mind then, so what we have is this super mystical brand. I mean, like our HSP is like the new X-Men that are yet to be identified. I mean, how, first of all, where can somebody go to understand about how an HSP is, or who an HSP, or what actually those traits are? Is there some place they can go? Can they go to your website?
Well, I have a website that started off as a blog. I started in 2002 about the HSP experience. It's at hspnotes.com.
HSP. H as in the letter H. S as in the letter Sam. P as in the letter people.
Notes, as in taking notes.
As in taking notes.com.
.com.
Okay, well, we'll have all that information available on your profile at Radio Namaste and at namaste.com. So people feel free to follow those links and go there and go ahead.
And another place to definitely worth checking out would be Dr. Elaine Aaron's website at hsperson.com, where you can also take a sensitivity self-test. It's free and it takes 5 minutes to do, and it'll give you an idea of what kind of sensitivity we're really talking about. And it's not all emotional. A lot of it is physical and involves your environment and how you interact with people.
So. Okay. Well, when we come back from the break, what we'll do is we'll give some definitive outlines for people to remember and go forward from, so that as the HSP movement becomes more in your face, so to speak, oddly enough, I mean, here's that for a dichotomy. We'll give people some resources where they can find you, and we'll go ahead and talk about the alchemy stones that you'll be creating as the handout and the thank you for the true Namaste awards. And I can't give you one, but hey.
Oh, thank you.
In the future, we're going to be introducing our Zen Master Ted, who will be my moderator. He will be maintaining the chat room at Radio Namaste. And I can't wait to tell people about that. So hang on, hang tight, and we'll be right back.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
The Laying Out of Hands Healing Radio Show is about treating the whole person, mind, body, and spirit. Join me, Charles Smith, as I share life balancing measures such as nutrition and spiritual practices to help you take charge of your own health and wellness every Thursday at 7 p.m. on Om Times Radio.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
The truth is, you can't change the world if you're broke. I know, I've tried. Isn't it time you turned your life's calling into a profitable, freedom-based business? I'm Michelle Barr. Join me every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern for Sacred Success.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Awesome. Welcome back to Radio Namaste with your host, E, Sarah Nash, the Blue Collar Goddess. And today's first in-studio guest, artist and author and highly sensitive person, Peter Messerschmidt. We have been talking about his passion, alchemy stones, where he gets these designs, and how it allows him to express himself as a highly sensitive person who is also a very spiritual person. Now, let's talk about spirituality and highly sensitive people. I mean, in your experience, are they very religious? Are they very spiritual? I mean, what are your practices and how do you align yourself with what we will call a high vibration or high frequency energy?
Well, my experience has been with highly sensitive people in general is that they tend to be very spiritual people, but only a small number are following traditional, should we say, religious systems. There are definitely Christian HSPs and there are Buddhist HSPs and so forth, but more often than not, the highly sensitive people I have met tend to put together an amalgam of beliefs based on their experience and on sampling a lot of different paradigms and finding things that make sense to them and pushing to the side a little bit some of the things that don't make sense to them.
Well, I think perhaps a lot of us too, as myself, I mean, I call myself jokingly a goofy Sufi or a Mormon Buddhist Catholic. But the bottom line is that I have tried to find all of these different areas where I would fit in, where I would find my tribe and find a truth that I could align with. And it just never happened. And it kind of came to the point where I just realized that there is a truth in every little bit of everything. And as George Carlin said, Brother George, bless you. You know, that there's 7 billion humans, there would be 7 billion religions. But with regard to an HSP and spirituality, what kind of advice would you give someone who may just suddenly wake up and go, oh my God? I mean, as I've worked with some of my clients, I've been able to pinpoint a few of them. And oddly enough, it's interesting because here's the truth about frequency and vibration. It seems to me that in my practice, I get a lot of HSPs who come to me. And it's not like I'm out there going, waving my HSP flag, because for a while, I even just kind of stepped away from it. It was almost a deal breaker when you and I reconnected after our childhood meeting. But, you know, I was like, I don't like labels. And now I'm learning how to translate that into something where we can at least say, okay, it's a diagnosis, we can move on. It doesn't mean that's all that I am. But basically, for an HSP to come into a place of reckoning and it's shining the light on it and going, oh my gosh, well, this makes so much sense. What next?
Well, a couple of points here. I mean, one of the reasons we are probably going to hear a lot about HSPs in the years ahead is they account for an estimated 15-20% of the population. That means on this planet alone, there's over a billion HSPs walking around. So it's not just a small esoteric group somewhere. It is actually a fairly substantial part of the population.
Can I just break in real quickly? I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you because that's a horrible thing to do to an HSP. And I do it all the time. So I'm sort of like the rebel HSP in the crowd because they're like, how can you have your own radio show? How can you do this? Well, the bottom line is, how can I not? You know, I there are different elements to certain HSPs, but bottom line is how do you move forward when you're being pushed back by a world that says you can't do this or you can't feel that? Or, and then you're misdiagnosed. Asperger's, oh, you've got Asperger's. Oh, you've got, you know, you've got what is OCD, which is actually CDO, because if you're going to do it correctly, it has to be alphabetical order. But the bottom line is how many people are misdiagnosed and then find out later that they're HSP?
A lot of people actually do end up being misdiagnosed, and part of it is a cultural bias. I mean, culture in general look at sensitivity and think of it as some kind of fault or weakness because we're living in, I guess, what you'd call a badass culture where it's all about who's big and strong and can kick somebody else's butt and be competitive to get ahead. And so HSPs mostly operate by a cooperation paradigm rather than a competitive paradigm. And that can be definitely, in especially in the West, kind of a disadvantage. However,
I'm sorry.
One of the things that is very important for a highly sensitive person is to live authentically. And although it happens, you know, I moderate a couple of very large HSP groups on the web. And one of the things that I've noticed is that most people who come there because they've discovered they're an HSP, they are in their mid-30s to 50s when they first learn about this, and they go, oh my goodness, I had no idea that I wasn't crazy. There's actually a name for this, and it's, you know, I'm an HSP, and it's called sensory processing sensitivity. I'm not nuts. But one of the positive things is that in these groups, we're now seeing more and more younger people, college age, even high school people, coming in and say, you know, I've learned about this high sensitivity. You know, I want to find out more. And one of the things that is really important, and I can't stress this enough, is Dr. Aaron in her original research was very adamant about pointing out that it is a neutral trait. And one of the things that we have to learn.
Define neutral trait. What does that mean? If it's a neutral trait, what is that?
A neutral trait means that it is not a fault or a defect, nor is it something that makes us somehow superior or better than anybody else. It is just a set of attributes, just like, you know, being tall is a neutral trait, or having blue eyes is a neutral trait.
So I can't just decide to be, I can't just become an HSP. I'm born with it? Is that it?
You are hardwired that way from birth. And although there are people who insist that they became HSPs in their teens or their 20s, there are a lot of lookalikes out there, and people like to lump everything together under one and call it highly sensitive person, because now it's becoming a more popular concept.
Oh my God, it's going to become the new fibromyalgia.
It has the potential, unless the information out there is kept kind of straight and accurate. I mean, for example, a common thing with people who say they became an HSP, they came out of wildly abusive situations, and the thing that presents as an HSP is actually a form of hypervigilance that looks like, but is not genetically based.
Ah, the survivor's mindset.
Right. And whereas, you know, you can set them down in a room and talk to each for half an hour, not much might separate them, but after a few days, you will understand that one person is in a reactive mode based on experience, whereas the other person is having a biological experience, basically, that they can't help because their brain is wired differently. So one is a reaction to fear, the other is biology.
Well, it sounds like navigating the world of a highly sensitive person who, you know, we are hardwired to pay attention perhaps a little bit more closely, and then try to, we have to take that information and we have to make sense out of what we are being presented with. So what I have discovered as an HSP, which I went ahead and I said, okay, fine. You know, my experience with the world of HSPs is that I entered in these forums and I started learning about them, mostly because, you know, I have children who, well, one child specifically who was misdiagnosed. And I thought, you know, that this isn't what his issue is. You know, I need to know what's happening with us. So real quickly, let me finish my thought process here. You know, oh, shiny. Basically, I got really disgusted with a bunch of people out there who were screaming that they were HSP because they got their feelings hurt easily. That doesn't make you an HSP, people, okay? Anybody can have that. Anybody can have the opportunity to experience the world through the perception of everybody's out to get me or not. So anyways, I'm going to wrap this up here real quickly. Peter, I want to thank you for coming into the studio. I want to have you back too, by the way.
Okay, well, that can be arranged.
Especially because... especially because, you know, you have excellent articles out there. And one more time, just tell our wonderful listeners where they can find you.
Well, if you're interested in learning more about highly sensitive people, my website is hspnotes.com. And if you'd like to learn more about alchemy stones, you can go to alchemystone, without the S, alchemystone.com. And those kind of cover the two main areas that I'm involved with at the moment.
I wanted to tell the world, hey, thanks, Peter. And by the way, tell them that you'll be creating everybody who is awarded the Namaste Award and Alchemy Stone.
Yes, I have been commissioned by Radio Namaste to create a special Alchemy Stone that we will be giving away to people who win the weekly Namaste Award.
The real Namaste Award.
The real Namaste
Award. Not the tongue-in-cheek sarcastic thing.
No, this is for those who really did shine their light somewhere.
And that's really what it's supremely important to remember, that at the end of the day, what have you done to make somebody smile? What have you done to add a little bit of your light to somebody else's light? Because basically what's happening in the world, I've noticed, especially oddly enough, among what we would consider to be our spiritual leaders, and what's happening is everybody seems to think that there's only one spotlight and they're all vying to get underneath that spotlight. The bottom line is that there's so many lights out there, and one in particular, yours. Learn to value yourself. Learn to value your inner lunatic, your inner artist, your inner magician, your inner alchemist. Learn to listen to your inner critic, but learn how to do that. Be a little bit a little skeptical when you do that. For future shows, let's kind of give you a rundown of what you can expect here from Radio Namaste. We've got astrologers, artists. We even have a few witches, people who study different religions and places for spirituality. Next week's guest is going to be the astrologer Robert Phoenix, and we hope you tune in. Thanks so much, and Namaste. I'm honoring your inner crazy as you honor mine.